ESPN's Turon Davenport, talking Titans now on Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It is that time of the week. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com here on Robbie and Rex Road. And welcome in Turon Davenport to the program, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD. Paul Kuharsky with us as well, in for Joe today. TD, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. What's going on, fellas?
All right, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, TD, it is Colorado's Pro Day today, and obviously there's Travis Hunter there, there's Shedeur Sanders. We know the players in play for Colorado. So, how do you view Colorado, Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, and do you believe Sanders could actually still be in play for the Titans, even though all the conversations that we are having and the media at large are having are about Cam Ward?
Yeah, I mean, Cam Ward, they're going to stick and pick, and he's going to be the guy, but it's just a part of their due diligence. They said they want to leave no rock unturned, and so that's what they're doing. They're going to be out there to watch him, and I think he's still not in consideration, but still someone they're going to go ahead and carry out the process with.
You prefer Shedeur to Cam as a quarterback. Give us the quick sketch as to why you favor him.
Yeah, so I like Shedeur, just the accuracy, the processing, the decision-making, just the pocket awareness that he has. I think he's one of those quarterbacks that he's just he's surgical. And it's funny because you look at Brian Callahan's scheme, I think he fits the scheme. You do have the Joe Burrow comparison, and not comparing greatness, but just styles of play. He fits it more, and I think that's really the main thing. But when you look at Shedeur Sanders, and the reason why I think Cam is going to be the pick is all of the upside, whereas he's the guy that's going to elevate your roster, as opposed to Shedeur, who is someone that he plays, he's going to be as good as the scheme is. So he's basically, to me, like his ceiling is like high-end Ryan Tannehill, just executing the scheme.
People love in Nashville to get excited about project receivers. Bryce Oliver is next in line at that. Callahan spoke well of him. 6 catches, 95 yards on 9 targets. Not a lot to go on. This roster's thin. They're going to rely on some guys that don't have resumes. He's faster than NWI was, for sure, so he should get more separation. If he's like a co-number three with Van Jefferson, how comfortable are you with that idea?
Yeah, I like Bryce Oliver a lot, but I wouldn't be comfortable with that unless they have a very high-end number one or number two. Like, if they bring in a number one that could push Ridley to number two, okay, you're working with a little bit of something, but I mean, look, there's Oliver's. He's a good player. Like, we saw him in camp. You remember, you know, we kept saying, who is this number 80? He's making a play every day. But at the same time, camp is a lot different from actually in the game. So it wouldn't be really good for them, especially for camp, when they draft him, to not add a couple of receivers for him.
Yeah, my thing with Oliver, though, he was making those plays in camp, but he's making them with and against threes most of the time.
Good point.
And so he didn't rise up that much. Do you think that they could, after this draft, if they don't get two high pick wide receivers, which seems very unlikely, that they would come out of it and look at somebody like Tyler Lockett on the higher end, or at least Elijah Moore on the lower end, to beef up the group?
I think it's very conceivable that they look at a veteran receiver. They've actually said to along those lines. So, yeah, I mean, look, they'll probably double dip at the receiver side of things. You know, Burden is there at the top, and then to get a guy like a Dante Thornton or something like that later. But I wouldn't be surprised. Even you look at Keenan Allen, like, he's one of those veterans. Just to make it more quarterback friendly, like, you get one of those guys that you know is going to be a reliable target for your quarterback that you draft number one.
Well, TD, you bring up Thornton. So you put it out there earlier this week that he's on a 30 visit with the Titans here. You know, the size, the speed, everything with him is really incredible. Watched him a lot at Tennessee. The production wasn't always there. Injuries were certainly a part of that. But where exactly do you think that he could go in the draft, and what do you make of him being a potential target for the Titans here?
Yeah, I think he's definitely day three. I would probably say, like, with the second of their 2 fourth-round picks, was that I think they're at 120, I think it is, 123. I could see that being going to him. I like him. I mean, look, you're 6'5", 210 pounds, running 4.3, and it legitimately shows up on film. Like, you watch the Oklahoma game, right? He ran that slant, and he caught it, and it was, you know, we were even, and I'm leaving. And that's what he did. He left that DB, and I like the fact that the speed shows up on tape. But my only thing is, because of that speed that he has and that size, he was always going against off coverage. So as a receiver, if you get a free release off the ball, like, you could do pretty much whatever you want. I want to see how he fares against those receivers, you know, the corners, like Snead, like Jalen Ramsey, Jair Alexander, the ones, Sauce Gardner, the ones that like to come up and press and get in your face. I want to see how he does against that. And then he also has to improve route running-wise, because, you know, Tennessee, and even before that at Oregon, he wasn't really asked to run the full package. But if he could use that speed, and like Chris Sanders always says, base everything off the nine, you know, explode off the ball and move the corner back from his speed initially, then that'll help him run routes.
We've still been playing with some trade ideas, and obviously the big trade conversation's always been about a short move back. If somebody like New Orleans made a bigger offer that gave the Titans even more resources, how reluctant would you be to go back to nine, and who would your targets be at nine?
Yeah, I don't go back to nine. I mean, look, that quarterback room, like, would you go into a season with those guys?
Ugh.
With Levis, Brandon Allen, and Tim Boyle? And that's no disrespect to them, because they obviously have skills because they're in the league, but still, I'm not risking my job with so I wouldn't move back. But so far, I mean, if you go to nine, like, do you like Jackson Dart enough to end up taking him?
No.
At nine?
No, I'm not. I see if they go to nine that they're doing this stall for a year thing at quarterback with that bad group.
Right. But then even you look at next year's group, are they proven? I don't believe in Drew Aller. Everybody's already counting Arch Manning. He only played, like, he hasn't really done much. You know, so it's not really something that I would do. If you move back to nine, you're looking at, like, the Michael Williams, the, Chet McMillan, those types. And you look at that roster, they don't have enough blue-chip players to not get one of the top four players in this draft. So I wouldn't move back. I think it would be bad to move back past three, honestly.
TD, how far back do you think we could see James Pierce slide here when the draft rolls around? And if you're the Titans, based on some of the character concerns that are reportedly out there with him, if he's there at 35, which at one point seemed unconscionable, but he might be at this point, like, are you willing to take a shot on that if you're the Titans?
I'll be shocked if he's there at 35, because you know who sits there at 32?
Yep.
The Philadelphia Eagles. And Howie Roseman loves pass rushers. And they just lost Josh Sweat. They just lost Brandon Graham to retirement. I don't think, and I know they signed Azeez Ojulari, who I really like coming out of Georgia, but I don't see any way he goes past 32. I honestly think he'll be in the 20s. I mean, they love traits, right? And you saw the traits that he put out there at the combine. So I think he's good. And, you know, talking to some of the Titans brass, you know, I asked them about, you know, guys with issues. And one of them said something that really made sense, and it's so true. They said, you got to be a little off to play this game anyway. You know, so it comes with the territory, but it's just a matter of knowing how to turn it off more often than not.
So, TD, going back to receiver real quick, I know based on where their room is right now, they need everybody. Like, they need all kind of different types of receivers. Does it matter to you at 35 if that's where they go at receiver, the type of guy they get, whether it's outside, inside? Like, you know, Trey Harris is a name that's been floated out there. We talked about earlier the idea of Luther Burden potentially being available at 35. I'll still be surprised if he makes it down that far. But does it matter to you if you had your druthers, like, the type of wide receiver that they target with that pick?
I think just get a playmaker. And you could always, at the back end, match it, right? So let's say they get Burden. Later you get Dante Thornton, right? And he'll be your X on the ball. Developmental, of course, but he'll be your guy that you put on the ball. Let's say they get Jaden Higgins from Iowa State early. Then you could go later and you could get, you know, a guy like LeJonte Wester, who will be at Colorado's pro day. A Restrepo, you know, one of those guys to match. Me personally, if Burden is there, I don't know how you don't stick and pick and take him, because, I mean, this is a guy at this time last year we were all thinking was like a top 15 pick. And I know the production went down, and there's some stuff that, not off the field as far as like legal stuff, but off the field just as far as like personality stuff that they got to hash out. He's going to be, by the way, he's going to be in Nashville for a visit at some point. He's one of their top 30s as well coming up. But if he's there, then, yeah, there's no way I'm not taking him.
All right, TD, last thing for you here. You know, tight end, not a position we talk about a lot, just given the other needs on this roster right now. But I think they're pretty clearly interested in a guy like Terrence Ferguson from Oregon. So yeah. Your thoughts on him, having talked with him about that and what the potential fit there could be.
Yeah, he was a guest. I'm talking with TD, and actually Parker Kelly did that interview.
Yep.
I was in the air at the time, but he did the interview and he did a really good job. I like he's one of those move type of guys, and you need matchups, right? And that's what the league is all about. I think he would fit in well and kind of be what they had hoped Josh Wiley could be. So that's the way I look at that. But don't forget about Arroyo from Miami, because, you know, when they take Cam Ward and you bring a guy like that in, he helps out. He was killing the Senior Bowl. He was a mismatch problem.
They've seen a lot of him, too.
Yep, sure have.
Yeah.
No doubt. Well, TD,
right.
Great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and enjoy Philly. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, well, actually, you know what? I'm on my way to New York. I got my best friend with me, my center from college.
Oh, boy.
And we're on the way to go see the Mets. I'm going to see your boy, PK Juan Soto.
Yeah, not my boy anymore. Not my boy anymore. Can't buy a championship. Yankees have proven that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you're right. We'll see what happens.
Hey, get yourself some of those torpedo bats. The Yankees are ahead of the whole league in this new stuff, Chief. Get some torpedo bats on your way.
I got you.
Have fun.
TD, have fun, man. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you, guys.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Teron Davenport, our guest here on the program. We'll react to what TD had to say there. A couple interesting thoughts there from TD. I want to get PK's thoughts on coming up next. We got weekend winners coming up later this hour as well. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
You prefer Shador to Cam as a quarterback. Give us the quick sketch as to why you favor him.
Yeah, so I like Shador, just the accuracy, the processing, the decision-making, just the pocket awareness that he has. I think he's one of those quarterbacks that he's surgical. And it's funny because you look at Brian Callahan's scheme. I think he fits the scheme. You do have the Joe Burrow comparison, and not comparing greatness, but just styles of play. He fits it more, and I think that's really the main thing. But when you look at Shador Sanders, and the reason why I think Cam is going to be the pick is all of the upside, whereas he's a guy that's going to elevate your roster, as opposed to Shador, who is someone that he's going to be as good as the scheme is. So he's basically, to me, like his ceiling is like high-end Ryan Tannehill, just executing the scheme.
That was TD with us in the last segment, giving his breakdown of Shador Sanders, PK, who he is, throughout the whole process, been a big fan of.
Yeah, I think if we had more time there, we could have had a little bit more of a conversation about, I don't think they care about that. I mean, I don't think that they have a – first of all, I think it's more of a personnel-driven organization now. I know still Billy was taking a victory lap on that idea, but I don't think it was ever going to be a Brian Callahan-driven organization necessarily.
It shouldn't be after last year, yeah.
But, I mean, they were getting away from Mike Vrabel because it was too coach-driven, right? They wanted it to be at least more even. And now that Callahan's had a bad year, he's next in line to go. Mike Borgonzi is the strongest person in the organization. I mean, he and Brinker, but Mike Borgonzi right now on the eve of the biggest draft in memory for this franchise, biggest draft since the Marcus draft anyway, is the controlling force here. And I don't think he's looking in short term and saying what best benefits Brian Callahan, as opposed to saying what best benefits the franchise. And it's not as if Ward is unmanageable for Callahan in right. some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I don't know about you. Like, the way that TD was talking there, I think the phrase he used when I asked him about, like, the pro day today with Shadur, he's like, well, they're going to stick and pick Cam Ward at number one. He said a couple times, like, Cam Ward's going to be the pick. TD pretty confident that Cam Ward's going to be their guy once draft day rolls around there. I mean, look, reading the tea leaves, that seems to be where it's going, but I thought TD was pretty confident.
Pretty definitive.
That yeah. Cam Ward's their guy.
And let's be clear, I don't in any way, if they had the discipline or the discipline paired with gumption to do the stay with the quarterbacks they have and stall. I'm calling it a stall plan, not a tank plan. A stall plan. It's not because they love what they have, and my endorsement of them maybe going that direction is not because I love what they have.
Right.
It's because I don't love these two quarterbacks. And if they have conviction about players that they could get with the deal they could conceivably get, I don't think it would be a horrific path to take. I think it would be bold. I think they'd have to withstand a ton of grief. I also think, like we're saying about Amy Adams Strunk, if she endorses them doing that,
yeah,
let's hypothetically say they do that. They don't take a quarterback at the top. Now, I don't think they could take somebody else at one. I think if you're at one, you have to take Ward. But if they could trade out and get a reasonable package and not take a quarterback, she has endorsed that.
Right.
Look, I know when we've said earlier, anything could happen and she could get upset. If she lets them do that and then fires somebody for the results, that's absolutely maniacal, right?
Oh, insane. Yeah.
If she's letting them do what I'm calling the stall plan, and then fire somebody for the results of the stall plan, that's insane. So you talk about the job security of these guys and everything. It's completely opposite of Joe Shane and Brian Daboll with the Giants. Completely opposite if they went this route. And if they went this route, these guys are all employed next March and April making draft decisions again. They would have to be. Unless you're really just setting up Brian Callahan as a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, that, or unless like you get into your process here and you just feel like Brian Callahan, there are signs along the way next year in the season where you just don't think he can handle being a head coach. Like, you'd have to make a change at that point. But basing it purely off win-loss at that point, like right now, who's going to win with this roster? It's going to be hard to pull that off.
Yeah, right. I mean, you would be adding – you would hope out of this draft haul some very good defensive pieces. And so you would hope you could win some games 20-17 or 17-16.
Get excited.
Or 15-13. But, yeah, I mean, if you're going to base it purely off of results, it's not going to be fair to the process that you would be doing, unless you say like Callahan's showing can't get control of the penalties,
yep.
Can't get control of the special teams, things like that.
We had a conversation earlier about the scouting department, and we brought up how there really hasn't been a lot of change, particularly from Robinson to Carthon, and the idea of, you know, obviously when Borgonzi takes over the job in January, that is not the time to start making changes to your scouting department. They're already deep into the weeds on the draft process, and it just doesn't serve you any purpose to do
it's
that.
It's a May thing.
Right. So
in 2024, they moved on from Tom Roth, who then was in Chicago. I presume he's still in Chicago. He was the first and really only firing. And Patrick Callaway left on his own. He may have gone to the college ranks. Those are the only two guys from the John Robinson pool of scouts that are not here any longer. Two out of, you know, they're probably eight college, you know, like scouts on the ground.
Right.
Now there are other, like, you know, more administrative guys or guys that are on the road as cross checkers, you know, but these are, I'm talking specifically of the guys who have a territory and are following teams in that territory year round.
It's pretty wild. Like, that's not a lot of turnover for a team that's been as up and down as this one's been over the last decade. It's pretty crazy that it's played out that way. And it makes you think, especially with a new GM coming in, that could change here pretty quickly.
And I also heard, you know, of two of the three, I think I wrote this or did this in a pod. I believe that Treylon Burks, I hope I get this right, Treylon Burks' area scout wanted him. But Isaiah Wilson's area scout did not want him.
Yeah.
And who's the other one? Caleb Farley's area scout did not want him.
They ended up being right on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that I think is a bad way to start. Like, these guys, their power, you know, and their influence should only be so much. But I think if the guy who's been on the ground, been around his campus, you know, hopefully talked to, you know, strength coach and secretaries and all of that, if they're doing a good job. And I don't know if these guys were or weren't, but those two guys had the right read on them. So Burks was endorsed at the most granular level, but Wilson and Farley were not.
I got one text that says, to what extent, if any, does the need to sell tickets for the new stadium mitigate against the quote-unquote stall plan?
I'm going to write this today. But I did some digging on this at the Combine. Not at the Combine, at the owners' meetings. I dug on it at the Combine as well. It's not as good a place to get information on this topic. The new stadium is selling very well. Very well. The team's 3-14. People aren't happy with the coach. People aren't thrilled with the direction. They don't know Mike Borgonzi. There's no reason to have faith that this year's team is going to be in any way quantifiably better than last season's team. In terms of selling tickets at the new building, this has not mattered. I don't know that we could put our finger on why. It's going to be, by all accounts, an incredible venue.
Yep.
You, depending on what level of ticket holder you are, it gets you in line for concert tickets, and they're going to be, you know, concerts out the wazoo with fantastic acts who want to play this building. In some way, shape, or form, I think it gives you a favorable chance to get Final Four, certainly a more favorable chance than anybody else, Final Four, college football playoffs, WrestleMania stuff, and I think people want that. It's not going to have a bearing on your Super Bowl. I mean, Super Bowl chances are low.
They are what they are.
Period. And I'll write more about it today. I'll tweet it out on what I have. It's a smaller venue, so harder to get in, which I think is part of why it's smaller, to make it a hotter ticket.
Yep.
But the Titans' immediate results these last 3 years are not overwhelming NFL football in your city with your team in a sparkling new venue.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll have weekend winners coming up next. We'll take more of your questions for PK to get to on the Titans front as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
It's time to pick some winners. We hope. Robbie and Rex Road have weekend winners for you now on ESPN. 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app.
It is time for weekend winners here on Robbie and Rex Road. Rex Road abandoning the competition today, but he has sent in his picks. PK is with us on the program as well.
I will rate the picks.
You will rate the picks. And, you know, look, we're doing a Preds Pick to Click competition. It's hard to score in that competition. I think PK's success rate this year was like 75%.
So. I believe that's correct.
We got an expert with us here on the program. Keys are the best week last week. 5-1 with your lock. Rexro went 4-2, no lock. I went 3-3, no lock. So a couple weeks after going 6-0, I went 0-6 and now 3-3.
That's
so
impressive. Just
definition of inconsistent.
An impressive fall back there. The overall standings, Rexro in first with a 19-17 record, 4-2 on his locks, 23 points. I'm also 19-17, 3-3 on my locks, good for 22 points. Keys are 18-18, 3-3 on his locks, 21 points. So with that in mind, we begin with the Final Four coming up this weekend. On the men's side of things, Florida taking on Auburn in the SEC matchup. Florida favored by 2.5 in this one. Rex Rhodes in first. He's picking Florida in this one. I'm going Auburn. I think Auburn pulls off the upset. I'll take Auburn plus the 2.5, and I think I'll take Auburn to win the game outright. Keyser, Auburn, Florida coming up. Florida favored by 2.5.
Yeah, give me the Tigers. They've been good to me this tournament. So, and look, my brother and his frat brother's going to go nuts. But, and also, I'm going to lock down on this one. Wow. Why not? They have done very well for me. So, I'm going to just go ahead and fully commit to it.
That's a lot of
two of you incorrect. It will be the Gators.
Going with Florida. PK going with the Gators in this matchup. Houston taking on Duke. Houston just smoked Tennessee, and Duke just smoked Alabama over the weekend. Duke is a 5.5-point favorite in this one. Give me Duke. I think Cooper Flagg and company are unstoppable. I think they're going to win the whole thing. But give me Duke minus the 5.5 against a very, very good defensive Houston team. Nick Keyser, your selection.
Yeah, I took the words out of my mouth. I mean, Duke is awesome. They've been phenomenal all tournament. Cooper Flagg has overcome that injury that he had early on. So give me the Blue Devils.
Rexro's going with Houston. Rexro's going with Houston plus the 5.5. And if memory serves me correctly, he might be taking Houston to win.
I think so.
Outright. But we'll see. PK, Duke, what do we think?
Duke will win, but they will not cover.
Going with Duke to win, but not cover the 5.5. Big one on Sunday.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Canadians and the Predators coming up at Bridgestone Arena.
The Alex Carrier Bowl.
It actually is big for Montreal. Preds have lost 5 in a row, and it is a crawl through glass to get to the end of this regular season here. Keyser, you're up first in this one. Who you got?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Montreal. They're going to lose 6 in a row.
I will also go with Montreal. So did Joe Rexroad. PK, are you picking the Preds?
I mean, if you pick against the Predators every time, you come out way ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically the way it's gone in the competition so far. We move to the individual portion of the program. 3 individual selections each. Keyser, who we got?
Yeah, first up, going over to the women's Final Four. I think Joe's going over there too, except I'm picking UConn versus UCLA. He's going with the other side of the field. But I'm going to go with UConn minus 7.5 over UCLA.
It would be plus 7.5, but yes, UConn plus the
7.5. Oh, okay, I didn't know. Okay.
Against UCLA.
I saw 7.5, yes.
Rex Rhodes going the opposite. He's going UCLA minus the 7.5 against UConn. So those are two differing selections.
I'd take the UConn side of that.
You're going the UConn side of that as well. Give me the Washington Capitals minus 1.5 tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks and make it my lock. That place is going to be insane tonight. Ovechkin's 3 away from breaking the all-time goals record against Gretzky. Chicago is a horrible defensive team. I don't know that Ovechkin's going to get a hat trick tonight and break it.
He could, though.
But he is going to end up with about 17 shots on goal tonight. I think the Capitals are going to destroy them tonight. So I'll go Capitals minus 1.5 at home against the Chicago Blackhawks. Rexroad's second pick is also in the women's Final Four. He's taking South Carolina minus 5.5 against Texas. Nick Keyser, your second individual selection.
Yeah, going back to some hockey, the Detroit Red Wings are a desperate team as well right now, right in there with Montreal. Give me Detroit plus the 1.5 against the Carolina Hurricanes tonight, Robbie.
I have the exact opposite. Give me Carolina to smoke Detroit.
Oh,
Carolina
okay.
Minus the 1.5 against the Detroit Red Wings. PK, your thoughts on the Red Wings, the season they're having?
Either amazing or a disappointment.
Oh, good stuff.
I'll take Jazz Chisholm plus 540 to hit a home run in Pittsburgh tonight.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Keys are your final individual pick.
Yeah, my intern Max back here has been very depressed about his Bravos, yep. But I'm going to go with Atlanta minus 1.5 to get their first win against the Marlins.
Going with the Braves minus the 1.5 to get the wins or get the win against the Marlins. Rex Rhodes' final selection, the Detroit Pistons, who are a 12-point favorite against the Toronto Raptors. He's taking the Pistons minus the 12 today against the Raptors. My final pick in honor of Paul Kuharsky, give me the New York Yankees minus the 1.5 against the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'll take the Yankees minus 1.5 against the Pirates. PK, your thoughts?
I appreciate that. I agree with that. And I will take the Phillies plus 108 to beat the Dodgers.
Ooh, a nice L for the Dodgers. How many wins do we think they're getting this year?
116.
They're a heck of a team.
Is that low?
I mean, that's a lot of wins. I think it could be low. How many did Seattle have? Was it the 0-1 Mariners team that went crazy and had a ton of wins? I'm trying to remember what year that was.
120 or 128? 98 Yankees did pretty well, too.
0-1 Mariners had 116. So, 116. Which at the time tied the major league record for wins in the modern era since 1901. I'd assume that still holds. Has anybody broken 116?
Yankees won 114 in 98.
Okay. So, Dodgers could break that this year.
Yeah, we'll see. That number about right.
You did. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. A couple more of your thoughts to get to with PK coming up next. We'll do that. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 1025-1063 the game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal comes from Bad Axe Throwing Nashville, downtown's largest axe throwing venue and your go-to spot for food, fun, and vibes. Enjoy panoramic views of the city, a killer soundtrack, craft cocktails from the full bar, and a Northwoods-inspired menu with a southern twist. This week, score half off a $50 gift card while supplies last. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals. Grab yours now. We're live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership with a buzz is always about great service. One
have
more
you
segment
thrown
with PK.
An axe?
I have thrown an axe.
I picture you as being good at it.
I got to be pretty good at it.
Yeah? How long did it take?
It took probably about the first 5 or 6 throws to really figure out how to land it. You do that, you can get on.
Were you wearing
roll.
A flannel? I feel like
I actually
people
was wearing
need to
a
be
flannel.
Wearing a flannel to throw an axe.
Actually, was with. I've thrown axes several times. It's actually pretty. It's
I
kind
think
of
it
fun.
Would be fun. Yeah. I have not done it. I need to.
Now I would advise like you need to have people around you that are somewhat athletic. Like I wouldn't take Chase McCabe axe throwing with me. It could end up in a total disaster.
I understand he's not the most sporting, to put it kindly.
Might be the worst athlete I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's terrific. Yeah. I also it's interesting to me to pair it at like to make it a drinking thing.
Yeah. I mean,
I've
had a nice Corona in my hand throwing some axes before.
Have you had 6 Corona and thrown?
I don't think so. I don't think I've done that. But hey, maybe we need to take a show outing. Do a little axe throwing out there. Although, the more I think about it, taking Rex Road axe throwing could be an absolute disaster waiting.
When the gout foot needs amputation, it seems like it'd be quite fitting.
Yeah, 2 birds, 1 stone.
Just have the paramedics handy.
Mike on the text line, PK, throwing this out there, says, what world do we live in? Now we're talking about James Pierce or Luther Burden going in the 30s, and we're talking about Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders going in the top 5. 6 months ago, any expert would have told you that Ward or Sanders would have been the 4th or 5th quarterback picked in last year's draft, and James Pierce and Luther Burden would have been at least top 20 picks. That's from Mike on the text line.
Well, in terms of the quarterbacks, this is not last year's draft. As you mentioned earlier, we got to get away from that thinking. The Titans are now and have always been, but we now have to look at it as they have the choices that are in front of them. They cannot grade these guys against Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels is not available. So I don't know what you want them to do in terms of that. They can say, yes, these guys are not Jaden Daniels,
yep.
But I don't know how it serves them in terms of choosing a quarterback given the parameters that are presented to them starting on April 24th.
Yep. As far as Pierce specifically, and you can throw Burden in this too, but I think more Pierce with the attitude concerns. I mean, new information plays a role in where things go. Now, look, the draft hadn't happened yet. Somebody may take James Pierce at number 19. Like, I have no idea where he's going to end up. I kind of tend to think along the same lines with TD that if he's sitting there at 32 and Philly has the opportunity to take him, I could definitely see that happening, which would make me sick. But, like, new information, you have to react to it. And sometimes there's these character concerns in the draft, and by the time the actual draft comes around, it doesn't matter, and they end up going high anyway. And sometimes guys fall because of those things. Like, I remember, and Philadelphia benefited from this too. It's like, I remember when Jalen Carter had all the stuff around him a couple years ago in the draft, and he fell a little bit, and then Philly jumped up to go get him, and he's ended up being an unbelievable part of what they're doing on the defensive side.
And you have to factor in, like, you can't look at Jalen Carter and say, oh, he would have been so good 10 picks early to so-and-so. Philadelphia's got a culture that, you know, you can bring in Jalen Carter if you have concerns about him, and they are going to manage that guy in a certain way because they're the Eagles, right?
Yeah.
And so there are certain advantages to for the guy and for the team that if you have a certain concern going to a top five team, not a top five pick team, a bottom five pick team.
Yeah.
That's a bottom five pick team because it's won, and it's won in part because it's got a really good culture and it's got veterans who know how to bring guys in and make clear how things work here and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, as opposed to the Titans and the Browns and the Giants and the Jaguars, where those are part of the reason that they're not good, is yep. that they don't have those guys.
We talked with you the other day about the opportunity at 35 and the balance of if somebody's there that you love, how do you weigh that of sticking and picking or trading back and trying to pick up more picks and maybe getting multiple players. Burden, to me, would be one of those guys, PK, where if he's there at 35, it'd be pretty difficult for me to trade back at that time.
I think it's pretty overwhelming that draft analysts, radio guys like us, and fans feel that way about Burden.
Yep.
And I'm sure the Titans have a line where they say these guys are absolute takes at 35, and after this, then, you know, we'd trade down provided we feel like we could get one of these guys in a cluster at 41 or 45.
Byron, real quickly on the text line, says, speaking of the Eagles, does PK have an opinion about the tush push and the possible banning of it? Bo did get tabled, so we'll see eventually what that looks like.
I think it's ridiculous to try to eliminate it. It's pretty clear. It's become pretty clear that the league found a sponsor for what the league wants in the Packers. Mark Murphy getting close to retirement here,
yep.
Took this on. And that the league's case is that while there hasn't been a bad injury on this play, that when one arrives, it will be catastrophic. That's a good case against it. But you're really punishing one team that has figured out something special that's been a differentiator, and that doesn't feel fair to me.
And it's been tabled for now, so we'll see if there's some adjustments to – kind of the language of it when they want to vote on it again. There's a lot of people that believe, and I think Sean McVay has talked about this, a lot of people believe that you're basically using the guise of player safety to take away a play that somebody else does better than you do, and that's the genesis behind this move. So we'll see what ends up happening with the tush push. PK, thanks for being in with us.
It's been good. I'll see you again Tuesday
as
Rex Road recovers from the championship game. Don't block the box out there. Be sure to lock your locks. WSMV, do some film review.
That's going to do it for us today here on the program. The Chase and Big Joe Show is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.